Tonight on Arena, new albums from Clare O'Leon Bridges and Darkside up for review, and Isabel Nolan on her new exhibition, A Delicate Bond, which is also a gap. +51 is the text. You can tweet the programme at RTE Arena. We start this evening in the world of opera and A Thing I Cannot Name, new opera film from Irish National Opera. In it, three very different women are connected only by the intensity of their wildly dissimilar desires. Set in a single apartment in Dublin that changes hands between these three women over different periods of time. Megan Nolan, whose first novel, Acts of Desperation, was published to huge acclaim earlier this year, has taken up the role of librettist alongside director Aoife Spillane Hicks, well known for her work in theatre, and I think giving us her operatic debut. Well, maybe not. It's her debut with Irish National Opera. Maybe that's what it is here. But let's go to you first, if we can, Megan. This is your first libretto. How familiar were you with the world of opera, and what attracted you to tell the story of these three women in the operatic form?
I wasn't familiar at all with opera, to be honest with you. I'd seen a few, but you know, kind of by happenstance at arts festivals in Waterford and a few other places, I just kind of come across them, but I had never sought it out before and I knew nothing about it. It was because Amanda approached me, Amanda Feary, who's the composer of the opera, and she had read some of my work and she had identified with some things I had written about desire, and she was interested in putting those ideas into what she wanted to create. So that was where the conversation began, really.
And in terms of the three characters, maybe give us a sense of who these three women are. I love the fact that they all live in the same apartment, but at totally different times, which is very handy when it comes to doing a production around with where COVID is involved.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's one woman who's who's in my sort of age range, which would be early 30s, and she's getting married, and she's become sort of obsessed with her fiancé's ex-partner, and is kind of consumed by almost erotic fixation on this woman who used to be with her partner.
This is the character of Jean, isn't it?
That's correct. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then the other two?
And then there's Catherine, who's a bit older again, and she's sort of spent a lot of her life with her parents, dedicated to her parents, and never really sort of found her way away from that family unit to find her own more defined family unit or interests of her own, really. And she's grappling with that fact that she's now left on her own in her middle age and struggling with that. And then there's our youngest character, who's struggling with an unrequited love and a sort of intense affair with somebody who she's not quite sure is actually real almost. So it's a person whose affections come and go in such a mysterious way that she's not quite sure even if she's imagining it or not.
Well, listen, let's have a listen to the three singers in action then before we speak with Aoife. Rebecca here is played by Kellyanne Masterson, Jean by Rachel Good, and Catherine by Eve Kelly. And because the wonders of technology in making a film, we can actually hear the three of them sing together. But I'll ask Aoife about how that worked afterwards. The voices of Kellyanne Masterson, Rachel Good, and Eve Kelly as Rebecca, Jean, and Catherine, respectively, in the opera A Thing I Cannot Name, with a libretto by Megan, who is speaking with us this evening, Megan Nolan, and also being directed at the opera. The opera film was by Aoife Spillane Hicks. So let's clarify the question I was asking myself as I was making the introduction, Aoife. Is it actually your debut in opera, or is it your debut with Irish National Opera?
It is pretty much both, but I did do one of INO's wonderful 20 shots of opera at the end of last year, but this is the first, the meatiest opera piece that I've done.
And what a lovely piece of meat it is, if we can continue with that analogy. The idea of the three women living in this apartment at different times, it really, I don't know whether it was a kind of a prerequisite in terms of how you wanted to film it, or did it just feed in brilliantly into the fact that, you know, we are kind of so isolated in the way we're doing everything at the moment, that this setup was perfect for that?
Well, it really was perfect for COVID setups. And but it's a really funny thing because it's a piece about three women who are on their own. And yet, throughout the process, it was often nearly impossible to work with only one woman because, as you can hear with the music, it is so profoundly intertwined, not only in terms of an audience's experience of it, but for each of those singers to actually get their cue. They need one another. So what was beautiful about what Amanda and Megan did in the bones of the piece, but also what we had to do in the execution of it and the rehearsal of it was always about three individual strands that were ineluctably woven together as well.
It's funny the way these things happen sometimes. The second item that we'll be talking about on the programme this evening is an exhibition called A Delicate Bond, Which Is Also a Gap. It really struck me that, in fact, that's kind of what exists between these three women and also in Isabel Nolan's exhibition. But we'll talk further to Isabel about that when we're speaking to her later on. But Megan, that beautiful choral piece that we heard there, it almost sounds like a choir, even though it's just three voices, and the overlapping voices. Given that it was, you know, pretty much your first experience of opera, how exciting was it to hear and to think about words in a way that they could overlap like that, that you couldn't necessarily do in a straightforward novel at any rate? You might do it in a postmodern novel, but in a straightforward narrative, you couldn't really do that.
No, not at all. It was really quite magical for me because I've never collaborated with anyone before in my life, really. You know, like I've always worked completely on my own. So even showing Amanda my first draft and learning very quickly from her how I couldn't write in my usual way. You know, it can't be this sort of a verbose sentence that I might be inclined to produce, and it has to be with a mind to being sung, and even that process was a bit difficult for me to try and get to grips with, but really interesting, and just thinking about it through a different brain, like through Amanda's brain, which I'm not I can't read music, for instance, so it was all brand new to me, and then to hear what she made from it was really so moving, and you know I'm over in London, so I wasn't there to listen to it in person, but I sort of set the mood here and like turned off the lights and lit a candle and listened to it for the first time, and just it was really incredible. And very moving.
Yeah, and I can imagine too, like in that opening section that we heard, it's not just the way the voices overlap, but there's also, it struck me, maybe we hear the opening music, then we hear the three voices together, and then there's a silence of voices, even though we're hearing music underneath it. That must be exciting for you as a wordsmith to realise, oh, there's a whole bundle of other stuff that can be in between my words that adds something, and that the sum becomes greater than the whole almost.
Exactly, and it makes me think totally differently about my own work as a whole, you know, apart from this work, about what can exist in the spaces between what's made obvious, and that's been wonderful for me to think about.
Yeah, and it's the whole that's made greater than the sum, before somebody texts in to tell me. And Aoife, to come back to you, and the visual aspect of this is very interesting as well, because you obviously, this was made with being watched as in a film version in mind. It's a three-way split screen. Just explain what's happening there.
Well, because we have, you know, the word that was at the center of so many of our conversations, both in terms of with Megan and Amanda in the early stages, as well as with the rehearsal and the design process, was the idea of the triptych. that we have these three individual panels. Sometimes they get overridden and there's one image of one of the women that takes over, but for most of the piece, we have these three glimpses happening simultaneously in front of us. And one of the wonderful things about getting to work with film on this opera was this is so much about intimacy, a deep look into these three women's intense moments on their own. And to be able to allow the performances and to allow the image that the audience receives to be so close and so intimate and potentially working with tiny movements of the face allowed us to explode even the tiniest moments, to explore the kind of the delicate and complex terrain of female desire that both the libretto and the score are working with.
And the other piece of, I suppose, three disconnected in some ways people, given that I presume you couldn't be in the same room together all of the time, quite simply the logistics of it, between yourself, Aoife, and Megan, and indeed Amanda, how important was the nature of the collaboration or the communication that took place between the three of you, probably in very separate locations most of the time, Aoife?
Yeah, we never ever were in the same room. I have never met Megan in person. And I haven't seen Amanda for about 2 years. So, you know, the quality of listening to one another, to being open to one another that we had over Skype and or Zoom and over email was absolutely vital. And it was really precious to have that virtual space.
Now that you've done your INO, Cherry has already happened. No, let's not go down that route. You've already had your first opera with INO earlier on, Aoife, and now you have this full length situation. But for you, Megan, this really was the dipping the toe into the world of opera for the first time. But from what you've said to me, I'm guessing that this was very exciting, and you want to do more.
Yeah, I'd love to. I feel like it's exciting to be new at something, you know. It's simultaneously quite horrifying to not be already good at something and very exciting, you know. So I feel like I've only really scratched a tiny bit of surface with it, so it'd be great to do something else. Yeah,
well, on the basis of what I heard and watched today, continue scratching, because if that's the surface, you're in for a very exciting time, as will we be as listeners. Thanks so much to Aoife Splann-Hinks and to Megan Nolan for speaking with me this evening. And A Thing I Cannot Name, with libretto by Megan and directed by Aoife Splann-Hinks, has its first online screening on Tuesday, July the 27th. That's as part of the West Cork Literary Festival. And you can find out full details on westcorkmusic.ie/literary-festival. See. 22 minutes past 7 on Friday night's Arena. The artist Isabel Nolan works in a range of media, three of which make up her new exhibition, A Delicate Bond, which is also a gap. It's now showing at the Solstice Arts Centre in Navan in County Meath. Large-scale tapestries preside over this show, with sculptures and drawings also in attendance. Full of vivid colour, intense mark-making, they take us through three rooms, three phases, moving from the beginning of culture 40,000 years ago to the beginning of the end of culture, perhaps, and finally to a post-human world. Isabel Nolan has never been shy of confronting the big questions about what it means to be human and how we create meaning on this strange planet of ours. Now, as we're going along and speaking to Isabel, we're going to tweet some images from the exhibition itself, and you can follow us on, obviously, if you're following us on Twitter, it's at RTE Arena, and you'll see the various images coming up there as we go along. In fact, the very first one is up there right now. But maybe if I talk about that title, I don't think you heard when we were talking about the opera just a second ago, Isabel. It's three women who lived in this apartment at three very different times. So even though they never meet, they have links to each other. And the way the opera is done is a film with a triptych. So you have a split screen with the three people there, even though they're at different times. And it really struck me that what you're talking about here, A Delicate Bond, which is also a gap, it's about a kind of a connection between people. And yet it's a delicate bond, but it's also a big space between us as well.
Hi, Sean. Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's a very nice symmetry there because there's three very large spaces within the Solstice Gallery. And so I've broken the exhibition into sort of three different, maybe tried to create three different atmospheres. Mm. And as you say, the sort of the first room then is a kind of a birth of culture, and the gallery walls are painted this very bright, beautiful, warm kind of colour, yellow. So that's sort of trying to, I guess, evoke the idea of the sun. And that's the room that houses two tapestries. They're quite large. They're about maybe 2 metres by 1.2 metres. And they show this figure, the Leuvenmensch, or the lion human. Yeah. So he's this early Ice Age carved figurative sculpture that I'm obsessed by for different reasons. And yeah, so it's about that thing of trying to evoke these connections that join us through time, but equally there's so much about that figure that we can never understand, and we can never know why it was made or what sort of purpose it was served or what it meant to the people who made it.
Yeah, the image is 40,000 years old, I think I'm right in saying that. When did you first come across it? And given that you said that it's something that has almost haunted or obsessed you for, I think, a lot of your career as an artist, when did you first see it? What was it about it that struck you?
I met him on the internet, but I don't remember quite what it was. And then I had a funny moment a few years ago because it lives in a museum in Ulm and it was displayed in the British Museum in London. So I finally went to meet it and I was sort of quite geared up to maybe be a little bit disappointed by the real Leuvenmensch, but he was very beautiful and incredibly compelling. So I just found it, I think, probably on Wikipedia and started to read about it. And what fascinates me is just that it's this sort of very early, I mean, it's not the earliest thing that humans have made, but it's this evidence of human consciousness, and it's depicting something that's entirely imaginary.
Yeah, so his real image was better than his internet internet image.
It was a happy outcome.
Because it's often the other way around, isn't it?
Exactly.
And I'm looking at our Twitter now, and it's Leuvenmensch. There, it's Leuvenmensch under the moon. Are there two versions of this on view as part of the exhibition?
That's right. So I was able to bring them together for the first time, which I was delighted about. So there's Leuvenmensch spanning earth and sky for 40,000 years, because it's this hybrid object I haven't explained. It's got a cave lion's head and four limbs and then a human body and legs. So it's this very strange creature. So one of the kind of functions I see it serving is sort of joining the earth to the sky. And this is the sort of moment that humans probably started like looking at the heavens and trying to make sense of it all by staring at the stars. So then the other one is Leuvenmensch under the moon, and he's very static and he's standing in these very kind of quite abstract diagrammatic landscapes. But one is dominated by a sun and the other is dominated by a moon.
And obviously the ancient nature of this is quite important. There's a Paleolithic theme, I'm told, in the room. Now, you might explain what exactly we mean. What era are we talking about when we say Paleolithic?
You might have caught me out there. I haven't looked up the word Paleolithic recently. I lose my references quite rapidly. So it's basically the Ice Age. To put it in some context, the Lascaux cave drawings, I think, are probably around 30,000 years.
Oh, right, yeah.
So it's really
way beyond that.
Yeah, yeah, extremely ancient. And it was found in like absolutely hundreds of little fragments. And, you know, the other thing I was thinking about is the people who made it. It's made from a mammoth tusk, so it's incredibly strong, hard to carve. They probably thought it would last forever. And now, you know, somebody in the 80s, I think, finally pieced it together out of 268 fragments.
Well, what's interesting there, isn't it, that, you know, even though the specific object may not have lasted forever, somehow the image has lasted forever and can possibly outlive any of its actual realizations.
Mm. I mean, I think it will now. It's certainly a sort of a very, you know, it was kind of the poster boy for this British Museum show. People often talk about it as a sort of religious totem or the birth of a spiritual imagination. But I am much more inclined to think of it as the work of an artist. Unsurprisingly.
Yeah, and I know there are lots of spirals in that room as well, in that first room, which probably echoes New Grange just up the road from
Absolutely. I mean, the building is like a kind of dolmen itself in a way, and then you've got New Grange up the road, and I wanted to sort of embrace that and go with the spirals instead of trying to resist them.
Yeah, and I suppose New Grange again is only a child in comparison to Leuvenmensch in many ways. Let's bring us into the second room then, and we'll tweet our second image as we're talking here at RTE Arena if you want to follow these these particular images that we're talking about. And a textile is what we're looking at in the image here, Isabel, Miracle Wave. Describe the image for us.
So, yes, it's called Miracle Wave 2698 CE, to be precise.
Yeah,
so
it's fair enough.
A classical building that's been sort of undulated by this quite graphic, or sorry, overwhelmed by this sort of undulating wave. And so the building, the image of the building is actually stolen from a 14th century painting. And the wave itself is taken from representations of a saint who lived in Lindisfarne in, I think, around the year 600. And he's always depicted by this sort of beautiful wave that embraces him. So I'm always trying to make these sort of disasters into something that's quite beautiful and create something beautiful out of that sense of precarity and disorder without trying to kind of put the disorder in a box or hide from it. Sort of embrace it, I guess.
And the other thing that really that strikes me here, and indeed a catalogue of yours or a book of yours that I was looking at today, Curling Up with Reality, is the vibrancy of the colours, both in the Leuvenmensch images that you spoke to us about earlier, but particularly in this Miracle Wave 2698 CE. That is important, that actual 2698 CE, because I presume you're looking forward when you put down 2698 Christian Era, are you?
Yeah, I mean, well, in some way the show kind of emerged, I think, from a certain kind of anxiety about what the future holds, and also really kind of questioning maybe my own inability to look too closely at the present. So I'm preoccupied by the ancient and preoccupied by what's going to happen in the future. So I don't quite understand it myself, but I'm always compelled to make something very beautiful, as I said, out of this imagery of sort of disaster and disintegration. So in that room, there's, you know, a second rug that's really a floor piece that's made from fabric, steel rod stitched into fabric. And again, it's something that's very disassembled and broken apart. And all of the imagery in that room is about, you know, things sort of being undone or maybe overwhelmed. So the room itself is actually painted kind of a pale blue colour to a height of 3.3 metres. And so it feels a little bit like you're in a swimming pool. And I wanted that sense of everything is being engulfed by water.
And talk to me a little bit about, I mean, obviously you're an artist, of course colour is important to you. It is one of the important sets of words, if you like, in the language of the artist, is the various colours that are used. But the colours here really are vibrant.
I mean, well, I work with an amazing weavers who have a factory in France, and they just have an absolutely extraordinary room that's full of wool, and there's so many possibilities, and every single colour within any image usually has like two or three different shades within it, so it gives it a lot of kind of texture and richness. But I don't have a kind of direct answer to it. I'm just very attracted to using colour, and I often it finds that the kind of the image will sort of dictate, it sounds a little kind of corny, but it will sort of dictate. I'll find a certain colouring pencil in my hand when I'm making an image, and I won't quite know why I want to use it there, but I know it works, and that's it. And the colour just sort of builds and builds. And there's something, I mean, I have probably a long history of being committed to making things that I feel are quite beautiful and wanting the imagery and the objects themselves to have a kind of generosity and to be visually compelling.
When we move into the third room, and we'll put up the third image now, we'll tweet that third image at RTE Arena if you want to look at these images that Isabel Noland is speaking to us about, all part of her exhibition, A Delicate Bond, which is also a gap running at the Solstice Arts Centre in Navan. When the sky above will not be named, this is... we're really talking about space here rather than the humans. The humans have done whatever they're going to do in the next few hundred years, but they're not about the place in this room for sure, Isabel.
Yeah, that's the idea. So it's sort of an image of, you know, when the sun is, I think, set to go supernova in about 5 billion years. But I believe our lifespan, if we're incredibly lucky, would be we'd be able to stay on this planet for maybe another billion years. So I was thinking about, I was wanting to make this very kind of glorious and absolutely beautiful and detailed, rich image of a sun going supernova. So it reminds me, I always think of the phrase that I read in relation to, you know, John Wyndham, the science fiction writer, years ago. It was described as a kind of cozy catastrophism, and it always comes to mind. So it's an image that, while it is of something that's a very kind of overwhelming idea, it's also something that we're never going to be able to see. So there's a real license there to be able to kind of picture something with all of these sort of looping spirals and this, like, it's a very energetic kind of woolen apocalypse.
And again, quite large in size. You seem to like that, working on a big scale.
I do. I love it. And they find big walls in the gallery. So that's the most recent work. So it was made particularly for the space. And it's 3 metres high and 5.35 metres wide.
Yeah, working on that scale, even imagining on that scale is quite mind-boggling. But you mentioned catastrophist in there, so I have to ask you about your tweet that I saw just before I came to air, saying that you had arrived safely on your bicycle. You'd arrived on your bicycle. I've had three mentions of bicycles on the programme this week.
Okay.
Two films about bicycles, and now you arriving safely. Do you feel you're taking your life in your hands when you get up on your bicycle?
I think I'm taking my life in my hands when I get out of bed every day, Sean, frankly, so... I have a very perilous imagination.
Well, the perilous imagination is serving you well in terms of the art, so continue to be a catastrophist in that respect, Isabel. Lovely to have spoken with you, Stephen. Thanks for being with us. That's Isabel Nolan there, and she was speaking to us about her exhibition, A Delicate Bond, which is also a gap, runs at the Solstice Arts Centre in Navan and County Meath through until the 20th of August, and you can find out full details on solsticeartscentre.ie. And so to album reviews, my favourite half hour of the week, probably because it's the last half hour of the week as much as anything else. Up for this evening first will be Claro, abbreviated stage name for American pop singer and songwriter Claire Elizabeth Cottrell. She began posting music on the internet at the age of 15, a record deal and debut album followed 2 years later. She's almost a veteran now then at 22, and she's giving us her second album, which is called Sling. Another young American star will be our second offering this evening. Broken ground over the last 7 years has Leon Bridges, 32-year-old soul singer, Grammy nominated for his first album in 2015. The new album is called Simply Gold Digger Sound. And finally, Dark Side, musical collaboration between Dave Harrington, multi-instrumentalist from Brooklyn, New York, and Chilean American electronic musician and producer Nicholas Yar. He's from a famous family, isn't he? Or Jar, I presume he is. Darkside released their first album in 2013. A live version of the album followed a few years later. And now the duo's second relief arrives. It's called Spiral. Louise Bruton, Simon Marr have been listening. We'll start with Claro from the current album. The album's called Sling, and the track that we're going to listen to is called Amoeba. Could you say the title of the song there, Sling, the album from American singer-songwriter Claro, 22-year-old, grown incredibly in stature since her first posting of videos on the internet at the age of 13. But you see, it's only old fellas like me who'd be talking about, isn't she great? She was stuff up on the internet when she was just 13. That, Louise Bruton and Simon Marr, our reviewers, Louise, that really is... That's the route to the music industry if you're a young person interested in having a life in the music industry, really, isn't it, via the internet?
Well, it is and all, but I suppose Claro has a lucky streak because her dad is a bigwig in the marketing executive world.
Oh, you old cynic.
I know, crazy. He works at Converse, Starbucks, Coca-Cola, and he's also on a big charity associated with the Grammy Awards. So she did upload her music, but also her dad was listening in, so...
All right, so he kind of knew how to make sure that it got some traction, as they say, in those quarters. However, what got traction with you, Simon Marr, was never mind the old internet, a dog story.
Exactly. I love a dog story. And if you can bring a dog story together with rock and roll, that can only be a good thing. Like everybody in the world, there's been major, major upheaval. And for Claro, it's been no different. And she moved, you know, she moved from a fairly rural sort of an area right into the heart of the city. But she got herself a dog, Joni. And Joni is, I suppose, if you can have a dog as a muse, Joni is Claro's muse in this. She appears at various times with little sort of whimpers and barks that she goes, and she even gets her own track on an album as well, which isn't bad work at all for a puppy.
Yeah. You don't have the puppy track here. But I'm going to play a second track here called Blouse, because I can hear you two, well, I think I can hear you two kind of bouncing up and down a little bit here. Let's have a listen to Blouse.
When you're just looking down your blouse, it's something I wouldn't say out loud. If touch which could make them hear, then touch me now. If touch could make them hear, then touch me now.
That's a song called Blouse from Clairo and her second album. The album is called Sling. I had to play the lyrics of that about three times when I listened to it earlier on to be sure that I was hearing what I thought I was hearing. I was hearing what I thought I was hearing Louise Bruton, wasn't I? She's talking about people looking down her blouse.
Yeah, she says, why do I tell you how I feel when you're too busy looking down my blouse? And I think part of the trick of Clairo is that you really have to listen carefully. She's her music is kind of it's soft bedroom pop for gentle souls with very complicated lives, and she tends to deliver a lot of her punches with a whisper, and that's kind of what Blouse does, because it's about casual misogyny that she experiences being a young woman in the music industry. And it's a theme that she explores further on a song called Management as well, which is very clever the way that it's done. And a lot of it's got to do with some of the production by Jack Antonoff, who's worked with Lorde, Lana Del Rey, St. Vincent, basically anyone, any great alternative pop woman right now.
Yeah.
And that song itself, it plays out the success of her career at such a young age. But she goes back to the comfort of her mother in her childhood, but she also wants to fast forward to a time of control where she'll have friends and men who don't interject. And the pacing of the song also kind of moves with this time travel, which is just very smart.
No, I love the way you describe that. Soft bedroom pop with for gentle souls with complex lives. I can see that going up on some review somewhere. It's a great description. But I have to admit, and yes, that's a lovely arrangement, and it's slightly different. There's some of the earlier arrangements have been there are loads of instruments in there, but very controlled, you know, it's never overpowering. There you have a real singer-songwriter feel with the guitar and then those lovely strings and that come in just as I faded it there. But I did actually write down when I got to that, which Blouse, which is track 5 on the album, Simon, very similar to tracks 1 to 4 in terms of the vocals particularly.
Yeah, there can be, and I think there's a style thing. I think she's made a very conscious decision that this is going to be a very different style to her debut, and bringing in somebody like Jack Antonoff on co-production with her has really led to that style. But what tends to happen sometimes during the songs, and I think it's a shame on occasion, is that you almost lose, because they've put in so many little layers, and even in quite low-paced tracks, there's a lot of layers, and it's as if the story and the vocal sometimes almost, because her vocal is very soft anyway, almost gets lost somewhere off in the mix. And that's the thing that makes some of the songs sound not entirely different to one another, even though if you heard them probably in a different context, if you heard her perform them live with the guitar, they would sound very different. But in the way that they're produced, they tend to sound a little bit similar.
Yeah, I was going to say, not entirely different. Don't you mean just the same? So let me ask you to give a judgment on the album in terms of stars out of 5. You first of all, Louise.
I go with 3.5 because, like, the word timeless has been used a bit, but that's because it's nothing we haven't heard before.
3.5 out of 5. And what are you saying, Simon?
I'm going to give this a 4 out of 5. She's getting a half a mark for the puppy and then 3.5 for the album.
You're such a big softie. That's Clairo and the new album, which is called Sling. Let's move on to Leon Bridges, 32-year-old American soul singer, songwriter and producer. Breakthrough hit also is the title of his debut album, came in 2015. Coming Home was the title of that song and album. Album number 2 comes this today. Or sorry, album number 3, beg your pardon. Gold Digger's Sound. And let's listen to a track called Don't Worry.
But I give you love. I used to say that kind of stuff. Like a broken clock, stop giving you time. Are you taking your love to another guy? Tell me what he gonna do, what he gonna do. How we gonna make sweet love to you?
Don't Worry, track there from Leon Bridges, the new album Gold Digger Sound. That's a track featuring Ink as well. But we'll talk about the collaborations in a moment, Simon. But first of all, tell us a little bit about Leon Bridges so far. Grammy nominated for his first album in 2015. Has he progressed and changed and developed since that? He sounds like a very sincere chap on that album, on that track anyway.
He is. He's talked in the past, but there's two things that he's talked about a lot. One is about the lack of, I suppose, self-belief that he has in himself, and that he struggles to get that down onto a record. But the second thing he's talked about, and what's probably inspired a lot of Gold Digger sound, is people have come out and said the genre, that sort of R&B soul sound, is gone and is dead. And he's been very, very vocal about saying, no, it's not, you know. And he said, look, this is the sort of records that we can and I can still produce. And you can see that he's really, really trying to progress all the way through this. But there's a feeling right the way through the album, for me anyway, that he's still holding back a little bit, and that's a pity.
So the Ink is the part that one of the collaborators on that track that we just heard, Don't Worry Louise, but also we have Robert Glasper there, I suppose really bringing jazz, R&B and hip hop together. Glasper does in his own work. Is that the kind of thing that Bridges is trying to do here? Is he trying to not just be the R&B guy, or is he happy to stick with the R&B and let a few others come in alongside him?
I think there's a huge issue of collaboration on this album, and it's Robert Glasper. He appeared on Kendrick Lamar To Pimp a Butterfly, as well as this multi-instrumentist Terrace Martin. He also appeared on To Pimp a Butterfly, and he features on this album. And I think the video for Sweeter was also directed by the R&B singer Anderson .Paak. So there's a great force of kind of black men working on this album. And I think that the concept from Kendrick Lamar's To Pimp a Butterfly carries over, where we're moving through the city of Los Angeles as a black man and what that's like. And I think when you kind of take that idea and apply it to all of these songs, they give it a greater power, because Sweeter is a song that was recorded shortly after George Floyd died. And I think that there in that song, in its politicalness, where it says, one of the lyrics goes, I wish I had another day, but it's just another day. It shows the injustice of being a black man, a young black man, especially in Los Angeles. So when you look at songs like Don't Worry, which we heard there, and other songs about relationships like Why Don't You Touch Me, or the kind of the breezier songs like Steam, the existence of being a black man, it can be tough, but in the lighter moments, there's also kind of there's a heaviness there, because it is another day and this man has survived. So I think when you look back on the album with that kind of glimpse, it gives it kind of a harder kick.
Yeah, and the four of the 11 tracks in fact are featuring our collaboration. So let's have a listen to a little bit of one of the tracks without anybody alongside him. This is a track called Motorbike.
We don't stop, but the time do. Love is in another life, let me remind you. Look back, see me behind you. When it feels good, you don't have to try to. And if you say so, if you say so, then let's go. I know you're all that I want is in to match you. What do I gotta do to get you? On the back of my
So even when he has somebody on the back of his motorbike, he's still a nice guy. That's Leon Bridges with a song called Motorbike. Does that niceness ultimately, does it kind of go against him in what he's trying to do, Simon? Or, you know, does it make things a little too bland? Nice, as we know, is not always a great word in a review.
That's true. Well, you listening through to the album, and you think sometimes that he's obviously angry about things, which is rightly so. He's made sad about things, and rightly so again. But sometimes it's so understated and it gets so pared back that it started to lose its impact. And I think it's a real pity, because he's a man with something very good to say, and obviously an incredibly good musician as well. But it's just that held back that little bit too much restraint for me.
Which means in stars out of five, what, Simon?
I'm going to give it 3 stars out of 5.
3 out of 5 from Simon. And Louise?
I'm going to give 4. I think there's something something quite powerful about the gentleness of it all.
Powerful in its gentleness from Louise. That is our second album, Gold Diggers, sound from Leon Bridges. Let's move on. Final album this evening, Spiral from Dark Side. Let's have a listen bit, first of all, to something. This is a track called Lawmaker.
And how easy it'll be. He's wearing the doctor's coat, but in his hand is the ring.
Lawmaker, track from Dark Side and the new album, which is called Spiral. Now, I'm in Limerick this Friday evening. You're both up in Dublin. I can almost hear you jumping up and down with excitement from here, both Simon and Louise. Simon, first of all, before you get excited, just give us who we're talking about when we're talking about Nicolas Jaar. Are we talking about Jean-Michel Jaar?
We are talking about two people who have worked and collaborated and worked with a million different people and produced and are incredibly talented multi-instrumental vocalists. And we were just talking before we came in about how do you sit down and start an album like this? At some point, there was a blank page or a blank screen, and how they got from there to the incredibly complex record that this is. Probably the song that you played there, Lawmaker, is probably one of the ones that's closest to a song in the traditional sense on this album, where there's others where there's so much going that on. Is going on that it's very, very easy to get lost in it.
Yeah, but Nicholas Shar, is he related to Jean-Michel Jarre, I presume?
No, he's a J-double-A-R, I think.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. There you go. Thank you for clarifying that for me. And Dave Harrington, the Brooklyn multi-instrumentalist then, who's involved in there as well. Simon, talking about the complexity of this album and telling us that Lawmaker, which has a lot going on, let's face it, Louise, that's kind of one of the, I'm maybe putting words into Simon's mouth when I say one of the simpler, but one of the more straightforward songs.
Yeah, like it's gas that this is the music that they make in their spare time. Like this is the music that they make in their time off. But yeah, they kind of borrow a lot from like their music fans as well as like music creators. So they borrow from a lot of different sounds. Like you can hear a lot of trip hop influences. There's Middle Eastern influences. And then, of course, they're just big electronic wizards. So you'll hear a lot of kind of wirings and kind of distortion and skipping. And it'll be more vocal heavy than their first album. Which I was actually surprised about, because they really kind of lean in heavy with the lyrics, which kind of take you down sort of a dark and hypnotizing kind of psychedelic paths. The lead single Liberty Bell, like that just sounds like a far off dream or a far off nightmare, depending on where you're standing, with visions of blood spattered race courses and jockeys dressed in black, and it's just this like general overbearing feeling of confusion and disarray. Okay.
Well, now that you've described it, I have to play it to let the listeners see whether this is a dream or a nightmare. Make up your own mind. You won't send it around. Liberty Bell from Spiral from Dark Side. And even in the two tracks that I've played, Simon, it's very hard to pin this album down. It was a real thing that struck me as I listened to it. Every song is different, but yet they do join up into a unity that, you know, these are the same artists, even though they're very different songs.
It's amazing that you can have some level of coherence in an album like this. But it's funny, as I was listening to it last night and I was sort of reading up about the band themselves and typing a few notes together, is that some of the songs are 7, 8, 9 minutes long, and you kind of get lost in them and you almost forget that it's playing. But then what will happen is it'll pull you straight back in. You'll hear something and you kind of go, where's that from? And you go to write it down to put it in the notes and you kind of go, I have no idea what song I'm listening to anymore. But you know that when you get those good bits, those bits of payoff are really good to get. And I think that's what makes an album like this worthwhile.
Which means that you're going to give it a large star rating out of 5, I'm guessing.
I'm going to give it 3.5 out of 5.
3.5 out of 5 from Simon. What are you saying overall about this? Did the album work for you, Louise?
Yeah, I'm going to give it 4. Like I think they're very good at throwing you into the deep end of emotional conflict, and then they like pull you aside with some mad noises there. But like I saw them play at Body and Soul, I think in 2014, when they were playing like a headlining set at maybe midnight on the main stage, and you would never have seen the biggest gathering of music nerds in your life. So like this is for the serious, complex music nerds, because there's just a lot going on, and they're just like ahead of the game with it all.
So you've one for the soft bedroom gentle souls, and you've one from the serious complex music nerd. What for the complex serious music nerds are the album choices from you this evening, Louise?
Everyone is included today.
Okay. So stars, what did you say, Louise? Sorry,
four
from you for Dark Side, and 3.5, I think Simon said for Dark Side and Spiral. Before that, Simon and Louise speaking to me about Gold Diggers from Leon Bridges, and indeed starting the entire thing off Sling from Claro. And that is our lot for this Friday evening, as I said to you, broadcasting from Limerick on this Friday evening. And my thanks to Niall Hogan for his help in helping us get the programme to air this evening. Leah Murphy and Paula Shields were the researchers. Janice Furphy was the broadcast coordinator. Niall Hogan on sound here in Limerick. Jamie Doyle on sound up in Dublin. And tonight's programme produced by Olin McGann. Back with you as usual, 7 o'clock Monday evening here on RT Radio 1.